Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Field Pass. This is Dan, and I have John joining me. A somber episode we have upon us, John. After Indiana beats us down, there's really not much to say, right?
No, I mean, we weren't podcasting when 63-0 happened, but that was more of just like a, not necessarily that you expected it, but it wasn't necessarily as big of a surprise as this was. This was just a good old-fashioned shellacking, and we got taken behind the woodshed, and it was not fun.
Yeah, I mean, being at that game, it went from a little bit of trash talk from the Indiana fans sitting around me early to we feel really bad and like, oh, you guys are really banged up. Like, it's, you know, that wasn't your real
just
team
like
showing.
Almost insulting.
Insulting to a point where,
yep.
I mean, now Indiana is the biggest Illinois football fan of any fan base out there, because the better we respond and the, you know, more wins we can rack up, the better that win is going to look for them when they're potentially sit in front of the playoff committee at the end of the year. So they're now on our side after a hostile lead up to that game. I feel like there's plenty of back and forth between two programs that historically have not had much success. So it's just, you know, it was the bottom of the barrel in terms of Power Four programs, and it ended up being a matchup on paper that was supposed to be good, and it was just a beat down the whole way.
I think the most frustrating thing about it is, like you were just saying, two programs that historically in our lifetimes have been pretty hot and cold, with a lot more cold than hot in their football history. And I just can't stand the fact that they get Cignetti. Like, obviously we love that we have Bielema, but there's like a small part of every Illini fan that sees that and they're like, well, why couldn't we do that? And it's not necessarily it's not Brett's fault, not Whitman's fault. It's just kind of like the pieces align that he had a ready-made team at James Madison that he brought over, and he's riding that wave. So I mean, good on him. It sucks that it validates all the cockiness that, you know, Google me, and even after the game, like him talking about, he was completely correct, by the way, in the whole, like, oh yeah, we turned on the Duke tape and we saw that, you know, they were getting easy pressure and they just turned the ball over. It's like, yeah, that's exactly what happened. And it's something where going through and you know, I put the film breakdown on YouTube of Luke's game against Duke, but obviously I cut out all the sacks because that's not necessarily on him. I mean, sometimes they are, but it was one of those where that was like, I was cutting out a fair bit where you're just like, this is not good. Hopefully they shore it up sooner than later. And I feel like we shouldn't be talking about this in year two of an offensive line that, you know, has had some success, but, you know, by week four, week five, that's just something that I don't know what needs to get shuffled, but I think that there needs to be significant shuffling.
Yeah. I mean, the pass protection was one thing. I actually thought the pass protection was pretty good the first two drives, and then it went completely south. But the thing that stood out to me that bothered me the most was I felt like Indiana was running the same three plays.
Yes.
It was the
yes.
RPO slants, and Mendoza would just pull the ball, throw it, and they'd get yards after the catch, and we were not adjusting to it. I mean, I could pull seven or eight of the same exact play calls of those slants across the middle that ended up all going for big gains. And so to me, it was like, okay, Indiana executed well. I don't feel like I learned that much about their offense through that game. To me, that their scoring was more so the lack of adjustments and, you know, mistakes by the Illinois defense more than it was Indiana, you know, dialing up some crazy plays. I mean, they called great plays at the right time. They executed them, but there was nothing there that like wildly impressed me about their offense. It was more, their defense certainly impressed me. They got pressure on us after the first couple drives and we really couldn't figure it out. But when they were on offense, it was like, what is our defense doing here? I know we're banged up at some point, but that was later in the game when
exactly
it was already out of hand, and
made sense in the second half. But
yeah, that's what disappointed me the most in that matchup.
And I feel like that's telling you one of two things: either their dudes are just that much better than ours, and you tip your hat and you say scheme doesn't matter because they would run all over us, and it would be an absolute drubbing regardless. Like, that's one, you know, rationale. But then the other is just, yeah, the talent differential is, it might be there, but not to the extent that you're getting, you know, shellacked like they were. And then it turns into you just didn't adjust at all on defense. And yeah, like, you had some injuries in the back half of the game. I'm not expecting, you know, corners of Tyler Strain and Tanner Hekel to go out there and put the clamps on dudes who are potentially going to be in the NFL. But to start off, like, I thought that maybe the first couple drives there was some good momentum, and then, you know, I'm not going to, you know, necessarily excuse the poor defensive play calling all based on special teams, but you get a block punt that early in a road game when you're a top 10 team trying to carry some momentum. And it's just like, what are we doing here? Like, this is just like, not to, you know, absolutely segue away from the defensive concerns, but like, that's a tone setter in and of itself that just feels like you can't come back from that. And that was something where, looking back now, like, we have obviously have the confirmation bias, but like, that was just the moment right there where, yeah, the entire game fell apart and the team, they unraveled, which is crazy because like, a Brett Bielema team shouldn't have that happen. And the fact that like, that one piece of adversity is like what struck the chord that made everything, all the wheels fall off, is kind of crazy to me, because that's like, yeah, they had the answer, but then they just never recovered on defense. The offense, you know, got absolutely lit up, and it's just like, okay, you know, what are we doing here?
Yeah. And the punt block too. Indiana had 10 players on the field and they still blocked the punt. I went back and counted them just to make sure, but Bielema said it too, and I confirmed it. 10 players were on the field, yep, and we still allow the block punt. We did respond right after that pretty quickly with the deep touchdown pass and tied it back up 7-7. And I thought, you know, for a minute there, okay, maybe we calm the nerves after the deep touchdown and figure things out. And there was not much positive to take away after that moment. So disappointing, certainly. I mean, we're talking about the defensive issues. Like, there was one play, one of Indiana's 9 touchdowns, where it's like a 10-yard out route in the end zone, and Tyler Strain, I think, had the coverage, and I don't know what the play call was, but it was the easiest pitch and catch for a touchdown I've ever seen. Like, he wasn't in the picture on the replay of a wide open pitch and catch from Mendoza to, I don't know if it was Cooper or Serrato or whoever it was at that point. And I'm like, what is the play call? Where's the breakdown here? Because I don't know if that's an issue on an assignment blown or something, or there was nothing complex about it. It was a simple 10-yard out route, and our defensive back wasn't even there in the picture to make, try to,
I mean, that, do, yeah, anything. That, I'm hard pressed to blame Tyler Strain. I mean, that's just like, you got to know your personnel. Like, if you have to understand that you can't be putting either arguably your 5th or 7th best cornerback like out there on an island like that. Like, that's just, I don't know what you needed to change schematically on that, but you can't have that be a one-on-one matchup there. And that's something where maybe they got gun shy because, you know, Tyson Rooks got beat for his, you know, the touchdown there where, you know, he wasn't able to, he looked like he was lost as well. It's like, yeah, at a certain point I can excuse those, but what is the adjustment? And, you know, it wasn't just keep the ones in there, because then the ones start getting hurt, and then it just all, like, it felt like Oregon all over again, which was bad because I don't think this Indiana team is as good as Oregon. And also Oregon kind of let up off the gas in the second half, and it kind of felt like you could stumble away with a moral victory. Whereas this, it's just like, looking ahead to USC, I don't feel any shred of confidence because they look pretty good against Michigan State. And, you know, I don't know how they're going to address things with the injuries that they have and the schematic changes that are needed. And like, yeah, I trust Brett Bielema in the long term, but this is something where kind of a culture shock for the fan who is hoping that, you know, we'd be ranked the entire year.
I will say Cignetti is the guy who, he's not going to let up. Like, he's going to run it up on you. And once he's got momentum and is exploiting us, like, it's ball game, and it's going to look ugly by the end of it. So, I mean, it was ugly, but most teams, and I feel like most coaches at a certain point, just like, all right, we're running the ball out and we're just moving on to the next game. He's not afraid to run it up, and the score ends up looking even worse. But I was a little surprised because I feel like the national media reaction to it was kind of like, wow, Indiana's legit. And less so, there was less hate toward the Illinois team than I thought we may receive after that game, which, I mean, as an Illinois fan, I'm happy with that, because if that's the takeaway, that Indiana's legit and, you know, caught Illinois on the wrong day, and, you know, maybe there were a couple of Illinois injuries, and that's kind of the narrative, I'll run with that all day. But you know, I thought we were seismically outmatched pretty much across the board. It was more so the game plan was never good, the execution was bad, and a couple mistakes, a couple penalties at the wrong time when you're backed up, and you get a first down on third and long from backed up in your own end zone, and then it's called back because of a penalty. Like, everything that could go wrong essentially did go wrong, and that was all, you know, created by us.
And I feel like the positives that you would try and find, like grasping at straws, like, you know, Barry Lunney, I don't think he necessarily got the opportunity to call the game he wanted, but I still have full confidence that he's able to put out a good, you know, script and also adjust based off of what a defense is showing him. And I have a lot of faith that Luke, maybe he's not quite the top tier quarterback prospect that Mendoza is, but I mean, he's making enough throws and he's got enough talent that he should be able to, you know, take care of his job and execute. And maybe some of those sacks, he does need to, you know, either get the ball out sooner or he needs to not be so gun shy or see ghosts so quickly. But like, I'm very reticent to blame him for when you're just having that much pressure. It's kind of like, I mean, I'm sure a lot of Bears fans listen / watch. It's like when Jay Cutler, you know, he was getting happy feet the moment the ball was snapped, and just like your eyes are drawn to the offensive line when they should be looking downfield, and then you're like lacking your progression and then everything's going bad and then you're getting sacked. It's not necessarily on the quarterback, and I'm not going to blame that all on that process yet. But if we see it later in the season, then we can look back and say, yeah, he got absolutely crushed against Duke and even had some issues against the two Western teams. It's like there, it wasn't, you know, all peachy there. And then Indiana opened the floodgates. You got USC coming in. They love sacking the quarterback. It's like, I want to find those positives, but it all obviously starts up front. And like, if you're not getting the protection, if you're not run blocking sufficiently enough, that then you can have some kind of semblance of an RPO game. Cause that's the whole thing. It's like, you could look at the game and say, well, IU is able to run the RPO so effectively, or just run the quick game so effectively. Well, when you're not getting any kind of push up front or any consistent push up front, then you don't have to stack the box in a way that, you know, allows for linebackers or safeties to stay in those passing lanes if it is a pass play or even an RPO. So it's like one of those where you have to threaten the run. Now, I'm not saying you need to do the classic run pass thing that gets you in trouble and then you're punting and then your defense is getting gassed. But the fact that the offensive line is just not where it should be is, I think, the biggest takeaway on offense. I think everything else, like, you can make some comments about maybe the running back room not being quite up to snuff where we want it to be, but I'm hard pressed to feel discouraged about the quarterback and the wide receiver combinations that we've seen thus far. And the defense is, you know, we just touched on it. That's a whole different story, but like, you have to have the driver of your offense be the offensive line. And what should be a strength under a Brett Bielema coach team, and what should be a strength just based on the roster this year, it's insane that it's just, we're going into game five and still have so many question marks. Like, I don't know who the best five are. I don't know who we should have out there. I'd love to see Dez Schuster get a shot. I'd love to see Brandon Hansen get in there. And, you know, if that still means that Brandon Henderson is one of the best five with those two other guys out there, well, then you're going to need to maybe rattle some chains and make it so that guys who are redshirt seniors, who you thought would be the developed guys that they claim to be, they're just not. And whoever that the buck stops with there, I know Brett would ultimately say himself, but like, if Bart Miller's, you know, going to bat for these guys, it's like at a certain point the results need to change. And if we change something up there and the results don't change, then okay, we just need to figure out something different schematically or figure out what puzzle pieces need to go where. But like, I'm hard pressed to think that you can just keep rolling out these five and think that that's the best five for what we've seen thus far.
Yeah, I mean, we were playing from behind the chains, and part of it was we couldn't get anything going on with the run game. Like you said, the offensive line was having difficulty. I mean, Indiana was stunting, it seemed like, on every almost on every play, and we weren't picking up those stunts, and it was just pressure after pressure after pressure. But when you're playing from second and 10, or, you know, second and 8, or second and 11, or third and 8, then the game plan is like, okay, we need to pick up a first down. Then we need some medium to deep pass play concept to come up with, which means Altmaier's going to have to sit there and let something develop. And whereas Mendoza, when he was playing, it was, I mean, the RPO takes 1 second, the ball's out of his hand. So even if we have a pretty good defensive line, there's not enough time for our guys to get pressure. Unless we're breaking through with the initial move, you know, off the snap, you're not getting pressure on Mendoza because he doesn't need to sit back there for 3-4 seconds to find someone open. He's just quick reads, get the ball out and keep the chains moving. And that's the simplicity of their offense that, I mean, when we're not adjusting to it and it's open, there's not much you can do to stop it. So, I mean, we gotta, I think, execute way better on first down to open everything up, because that was the most egregious thing, in my opinion, was just everything's second and long, third and long, and it's hard for any team to get offense going when you're in those situations.
Well, and I think the other thing too, execution obviously is the biggest thing, but then you just can't have the mental errors happen. We already talked about the block punt. You just can't have, when you're backed up in your own end zone and you pick up a big third down. And yes, I know that the holding call might not have been on Melvin, but like, you can't then have an after play penalty that is offsetting. Like, yeah, let someone else on the other team be stupid and let that, affect the game. And like, it was one of those where a Brett Bielema coach team doesn't have that many compounding mental mistakes. You don't have a block punt. You don't have stupid penalties when you're picking up a huge third and long conversion in the shadow of your own end zone. You don't have guys hanging their heads immediately upon getting, curb stomped in the first half. Like, these are things that are not necessarily the best signals for, a team that returns 16 starters and has all the experience. And this is something that is exciting. And now this is obviously super emotional and super reactionary. I'm not saying that like we can't go out and win this weekend or that we can't still have a great season relative to expectations of our recent lifetimes. Like, yeah, it could end up still being an 8-4, 9-3 season. And we're going to be very happy about that. It's just one of those, when you see these kind of things and you wonder like, what can you do to get to the next level? And you see a team like Indiana that was farther below the depths of the basement of the Big Ten than us for much of the last 2-3 decades. It's like, if they can do that and execute like that and get the good players, like, how are we going to get to that? And then you see us kind of like doing the exact opposite and shooting ourselves in the foot and not, playing up to your best potential. Like, even, yeah, if you gave it your best shot and you got thwomped like that, okay, throw away the tape and then we'll move on to USC. But just like, there's too much there outside of just like not executing that you need to figure out those mental mistakes sooner rather than later. And it's unbelievably frustrating.
That game put my brain in such a pretzel with this team and the outlook going forward, because I thought we're a good team. I still think we might be a good team, but maybe Indiana is legit. Maybe they're not. It's just so hard to say. And it totally screws with my brain, because had it been a close-ish game, even if we lose by 2 touchdowns, but it's somewhat competitive, I can make the leap to, okay, this team is still a, potential even playoff type of team. But the way it unfolded, now I'm like, what is this just going south in a hurry? And you mentioned last year, the Oregon game, and then you come back after that game and you play Minnesota and you lose at home. I'm trying to figure out like if that game was more similar to either, Penn State, where you lose 21-7, but I feel like we were never really in that game. We were kind of got dominated and out yards in that game. And then we came back and played Purdue right after that. And yes, we won the game, but that was a horrific showing by us. And then after that game is when we flipped the switch a little bit on Michigan, won that game comfortably. So is it kind of the Purdue to Michigan response, or is it the Oregon to Minnesota response that we're going to see from this team this week? That's where my brain's at. Like, which of the two teams are we this year? And I really don't know.
And I feel like I kind of already drew the comparison to Oregon, mainly because of the injuries, because it felt like last year it was just like we were dropping like flies in that Oregon game. And like, I know that, most everyone practiced this week. So it's like, I just worry about residuals and even the fact that you're not even rushing guys back, but they're just not 100% when you maybe could have called the dogs off and then, still got your butts handed to you regardless. And it's one of those where this probably does look a little bit more like a Minnesota game than, that bounce back against Purdue. Also, because of the way that happened, like, I was, to your point, like, if we had lost by a couple touchdowns, even like 3, and it was like, even if we had like a late touchdown that made it a 3-touchdown game, I'd be like, okay, well, maybe, we're still favored or it's a neutral spread against USC at home. And it's just like, I totally understand why it's what, up to a touchdown almost at this point. Like, I think the market might be overreacting a little bit because of how Illinois football has covered the first 3 weeks. And then, they get absolutely smoked. So maybe it's a little bit too much of a market correction, but I don't think that, it's still, if like, we think that it's a couple points off, that's still 4.5, 5 points at home in a big noon kickoff game against like a team that's coming from LA and playing 9 o'clock AM, their local body clocks. Like that is all factored into like when Vegas is setting these lines, like, yes, they're trying to get as much action as possible. That's like the real driver, but like they're setting that line knowing all these underlying factors are going to be taken into account by the big fish that are then going to bet based off of that. And like all those things are priced in. So like, that's something where if we're looking at that, even just through a semi-objective measure as the point spread, like not great that you get your butt handed to you when you're a top 10 team. And then you kind of have to lick your wounds at home when you're a fairly considerable underdog again, like another touchdown underdog. And we saw what just happened with that when you were a touchdown underdog against Indiana. And I know that they're two different games, and I'm not trying to necessarily say we're going to get smoked 63-0 like Iowa at home, but like, I am very, very, very worried.
I want to play this out. Like the two paths we could go down, let's say we win the game. How does that change your perception of things going forward? Was the Indiana game so detrimental that like you'll forever have that cloud hanging over, or would a bounce back win against USC kind of reset your expectations again? And likewise, if you lose, where do you see this trending to?
Well, I think to take a bit of the emotion out of it, if we were talking preseason, which, you know, we did, like, I think 3-1 through your first four was kind of like the expected case, if not like even the better case.
Right.
Obviously 4-0 would be best case, but thinking that Duke could be a threat, you know, you assign maybe a 50-50 shot against them and then maybe a 50-50 against Indiana as well. So you're leaving with one total win when you're looking at it objectively preseason. So, and then I think, you know, the common consensus is the two big dogs in terms of home games would be Ohio State and USC. And so you split those games in whatever fashion and you try and run the table otherwise, because every other game with the experience and the talent on the roster, you should be able to compete with everyone. And we've seen Brett Bielema in close games win almost all of them last year. Like this is something where, okay, I can talk myself into two losses being like a pretty reasonable best case. Now it's kind of like, if we win, I guess I can still see that path technically, but now I'm more worried about the Washington game. Now I'm more worried about Maryland. And yes, like those are two teams that you should still have some advantages over them. But like, if the problems remain the problems for the balance of the season, it's just going to be one of those where, yeah, I can't confidently say that, yeah, 10-2 or 9-3 is going to be something that we, you know, walk right into, even if we do win against USC, because of the factors that, you know, I just mentioned in terms of them traveling big time East, their body clocks are going to be all messed up. You know, I could see them, you know, being a little loose or a bit off. But then that might not still solve the underlying problems because you got healthy against the USC team. So I healthy being a relative word, but like it's I'm curious what your take is on that. But like I want to kind of try and marry the preseason like thoughts about this and where we are sitting at 3-1. And that like technically, I think that's a good thing. But with the way that we've now seen the actual results, I don't know if I'm quite as optimistic that we can, you know, just go on that run that back half of the schedule. That seems pretty easy, all things considered.
Yeah, if you just flash me the record prior to the season of where we're at through four games and I saw it was 3-1, I'd be like, okay, you know, we're on track with kind of expectations, in my opinion. But I do feel like the way that Indiana game unfolded, there's unfortunately kind of this cloud over us now that regardless of how many games we win, we're going to have that and be like, oh yeah, but we got demolished by Indiana. Like, it was so ugly that people were turning the channel at halftime. And to me, that's going to be tough to shake. Now, I do think this win, you know, should you beat USC, could kind of propel you and get you back on the right track and get some of that momentum back behind you. But I don't think we can ever get back to the level of excitement that we had, you know, at riding high at 3-0 going into that Indiana game. And, yeah, that's kind of where, and on the other side, if you lose against USC, I'm like, now people are ready for basketball season. People are ready to jump ship and it could get ugly from there. But I think
I guess that depends how, maybe, right? Like,
fair enough.
Depends on how we lose.
Yeah. If you are not super competitive, you lose by two touchdowns or 17 points or something, and USC kind of has their way with us, I think people will be jumping ship. People that wanted to join the bandwagon will be jumping ship. And, you know, they see then the Purdue game coming up thinking, okay, maybe you win that one, but then you have to go take on Ohio State right after that. And that's probably a loss at that point as well. So it's like, all right, now we have three losses and what was supposed to be a fun season for people is no longer, you know, as fun, but I still think the floor of this team is so much higher than we've had previously that even if you lose a game to USC, like I think the way the schedule sets up, like you said, now we're starting to see the picture a little bit better. A team like Washington's probably better than most people thought preseason. Now that we've seen them play a couple games, Damon Williams looks really good. Like you said, Maryland's looked pretty good so far. So some of those games that were more unknowns, we're starting to get a better feel for what our strength of schedule looks like. And it might not be the back half cakewalk that we thought it was, but I still think there's plenty of winnable opportunities down the stretch that you take a couple lumps early, you can still get right in the back half of the schedule. But I don't know, this is a big one and you're not favored. You're, like you said, a 6.5 point dog in this one. Fox Big Noon kickoffs here for the first time, getting a, you know, a big national pregame show to come for Illinois football. And it's just such a bummer that the Indiana game unfolded like it did, because there would have been so much more excitement and buzz going into this, even if you lost that Indiana game in respectable fashion. But because, like we said, it was so ugly, people are just, there's that portion of the fan base that is vocal, that is just like, oh, this team's garbage now. Why am I investing any money or time or resources into them? Like, it's, we're just going to get beat. And it sucks to have that negative kind of cloud hanging over us.
Yeah, I think that those people have either lessened via just a higher concentration of fans now on the bandwagon, so they're just less, or a couple of them have bought into the Bielema effect and maybe they're coming around. So I don't know if it's necessarily going to be quite the attrition to, you know, basketball season, or, you know, the stands not being as full if we do lose against USC, because I think people can kind of like, at least me, what I'll be doing on the podcast is just talking about surviving and advancing through Ohio State. Like, you just survive in advance. It's a week by week league. And then you get to your two bye weeks that are, you know, kind of nicely in retrospect, like them being so close together, you just kind of like try and survive in advance through that second bye week and then get healthy, like figure things out. Brett Bielema off a bye week is good. So give him two and hopefully that's two wins. And then you kind of just build off that momentum for the rest of the season. And like, that's the way that at least I can talk myself into it. Even if we do have three losses to USC, Indiana, and Ohio State, I think that that's something where, looking through the rest of the schedule, I can still get back to that point of, yes, the talent disparity isn't quite as much. Cause I don't, yes, we can talk about the teams when they come up, and like, you know, you were just touched on Washington's talent, and, you know, Maryland looks like they might have a real dude as a true freshman quarterback. And, you know, you got to watch out for the pluckiness of a team like Northwestern. Like these are things that, yeah, we can, but that's not like an overwhelming disparity where like Indiana had, they have a lot of NFL talent on that team. And I think I was kind of trying to like not really recognize that going in, because I was like, well, they might, but that's just because they've played, you know, three tomato cans. And, you know, Cignetti thinks that his stuff doesn't stink, but like, it's really not that great. And we might have as much NFL talent as them too. And it's like, we might have some fringe, like undrafted guys. They have like some definitely like day two, day three guys at the very worst on their roster in terms of projectables. And so it's one of those where like, I think that might be the solace that I take, is that Indiana is just better than I was maybe giving them credit for. And I was giving them a fair bit of credit, and I think most people were, but like, they might just actually be that legit. They might be what we talked to Robert about when we were talking about the $100 million donation, and like how, you know, it's naturally setting up that there could be a program that ascends to take a new rank in the college blue blood, you know, for football. And this kind of seemed like a sparring match between two programs that are looking to get into that spot. And you see the differential of like what a team that might actually be there is, that like really true, like just below the first tier, like fourth best in the Big Ten this year, going to keep trying to build on that momentum. Like, that's what the program should look like. But that doesn't mean that we're falling into the ranks of like, I'm so glad that we're not Wisconsin. Honestly, like Iowa, they're finding ways to win games, but there's still some like very systemic issues with that in terms of how their offense is operating. And like, it's just, I'm still very glad that Brett Bielema is the coach. And I still think that this season's trajectory can write its course. It's just, to your point of like the cloud, like I think we're all very quick to like find it and know it and be welcomed by it, because it's where we've been for the past like decade more often than not.
Yeah. How about the dummies over at Fox Sports who announced they're coming to Champaign like a couple hours before that Illinois Indiana game? They had to be pretty upset with the way that went down.
Yeah. I think that that was maybe the Penn State administration putting their thumb on the scale a little bit, because they really wanted that whiteout to not be at noon, because that's like their, you know, big thing. And they've been very, them and Ohio State have been very vocal about not liking how big noon makes their marquee games not at night, where you don't get the good stadium vibes. And like, I get all that. So I wonder if that was a bit of like, well, we're going to kind of hope this into existence that Illinois is like either good enough that they win, or that they look respectable enough, and that USC beats Michigan State, and we've got like a nice ranked matchup that we can go to Champaign, and we don't even need to necessarily worry about Penn State being in our ear right now about not wanting to play Big Noon. I think it might be those two factors kind of coming together, and them just being like, oh, we probably shouldn't have done that in retrospect, but they probably were not necessarily encouraged, but I'm sure there are some people making a big ruckus in the Big Ten offices from Penn State's admin, being like, you got to have some sacred traditions here, and the whiteout needs to be a night game, and we can't keep messing with it. And it's like, I kind of get it to a degree, because that's like what makes college sports great, is having those kind of environments. But then also, all these people are profiting big time off of the money that, you know, Big Noon is generating. So it's one of those where I see both sides, but I'm wondering if that's kind of the underlying factor as well.
I feel like Bielema has been kind of on, you know, Fox Sports and ESPN College Game Day, trying to push for them to come to Champaign, and dating back to, you know, last year, 2 years ago, trying to make a push, knowing that we haven't had either of those broadcasts live from Champaign. So I think there's probably a desire from them to go somewhere new and try to do something different. You can only go to, you know, Georgia and Alabama and LSU and Notre Dame so many times before it's like, all right, it's not too many new segments we can do on this. And I think there's a novelty factor to going to a school like Illinois where you've never been, and you know, you get the fan base excited about it. Unfortunately, when you come off the heels of a beatdown like we took against Indiana, there's a little bit of a damper on it, but I still think the crowd will be there. People were buying tickets early in the year. I mean, this game sold out months ago, so should be a good crowd regardless, good tailgating and a fun atmosphere, and hopefully a fun football game to go along with it.
I think that's a pretty natural segue into talking about the game, because I think we can bemoan the Indiana loss for hours if we wanted to. But I think at this point we've driven the point home that not great, not really looking great in terms of the projectables, but hopefully, you know, if there was one man to right the ship, I would be hard pressed to find a better candidate than Brett Bielema. So hopefully, you know, the thing that I know about him is that he's one of these guys, he doesn't put like the overtime in just to say he's putting the overtime in, like, oh, I'm sleeping in the office this week. It's like, no, he's actually like busting his butt. Like, he might be sleeping in the office this week, but that's because he's trying to find whatever is going to be the reactionary offensive package to make sure that we are running the ball effectively, or how we're gonna, like, I would love to just see like, okay, we're going to max protect with seven, and then we're going to let Colin and Hank and Hudson and hopefully Boak's healthy, like, just let them try and beat men one-on-one and go from there, and see if that's like an effective, like, I know that he's probably thinking about these things and taking a little bit more of that top down leadership role this week, whereas I feel like he tries to kind of facilitate through his guys. This is something where I am hopeful that they're gonna come back with a vengeance, and hopefully the home crowd will get treated to a nice dub. But we should probably talk a bit about USC, just because, you know, we've alluded to it enough in terms of what they're about, but getting into it and talking about who they really are, because I am a little bit scared, but at the same time that there are enough things that I think we could come away victorious in this game.
Yeah, I mean, they certainly have talent, if not potentially even more talent than the Indiana team had. Talk about their offense with Jaden Maiava, Jacoby Lane, Makai Lemon, Lake McCree. Like, they got weapons, and they'll spread you out and throw the ball around as they've done for years and years and years. It's just that West Coast offense. You spread you out, throw the ball for days, but they do have a running back duo that is one of the best in the country as well. So they can kind of gash you from anywhere. Their offensive line has been solid. They've beaten two Big Ten opponents already. They played Purdue and Michigan State. You know, I thought the Purdue game, Purdue actually hung in there, and that was one of those come to West Lafayette, play them early Midwest game. And that gives me a little bit of hope, seeing how that one played out. USC ended up getting it done, but Purdue's not much of a team this year, and Ryan Brown still went for 300 yards and passed for 300 yards in that game. He did throw three interceptions, but like the fact that they could move the ball, Purdue could move the ball that effectively against the USC defense gives me a little bit of hope. I know Aiden Chiles was able to carve up USC a little bit as well. So, I think for Illinois to win this game, it's going to be the offense just kind of putting the team on their back and just carrying us. I don't know if, after what we saw last week, if the defense is ready to make adjustments. I could see USC putting up 31 points, 40 points on us in order to win that game. It's going to be the offense and Luke kind of carrying us and be like, hey, can we go get 35 or 40 points of our own and try to beat them in a shootout?
Yep. And not to bring it back, but talking about your point about like the cloud and all that, and even like the way that the rest of the season looks based on this result, like this should be a spot to your point, like the USC defense, like the Lincoln Riley trademark is, and this happened even when he was at Oklahoma, even when the Big 12 wasn't like, they're a physical conference, but they weren't quite, they're not like the Big 10. They're not even like the SEC in terms of the physicality that defenses bring. Like that was always the knock on him, is that, once you get into a big game spot, his defense would let him down. And you could probably have something similar said here. And that's, I think, the big concern is that if the offensive line, with how much concern and tutelage and stress they're going to put on those guys this week in terms of like hopefully generating a bounce back performance, like if they don't do that against a USC team that is talented, like they do have enough they've because Lincoln Riley has known about his deficiencies, it's been talked ad nauseum since he's been in Southern California, but like they've got some guys up front, but they're still, to your point, if like Purdue is going off that early in the season when Purdue hasn't even really gelled yet, bringing over like a whole 200 new guys, essentially, like that's something where that signal that we can probably get a good offensive output. If we don't, if there are zero signs of offensive output, being generated, and other than just like sheer luck or some defensive, havoc being created that puts us in a fortuitous field position, which I will take. And if that leads to a win, not going to complain about it. But if you're not bouncing back, especially on the offensive line this week, it's just going to be it's going to put a big damper on my mood, but I do think that this is a game where you can definitely get healthy. And I think you should be able to unleash Luke. And I think that's the thing too, with like even talking about the fact that Ryan Brown went for as many yards as he did. Like, yeah, if it just becomes max protecting and trying to beat up on their DBs, because if their DBs are letting up 300 plus yards against Purdue, which is, I guess we also did. So maybe it's not necessarily the, the mark that I think that it is, but he was only good against us last year. But like if they're letting up 300 plus passing yards to Purdue, it's like I'm fairly confident that if we just give Luke some time, he'll be able to figure it out. And I also have confidence that Barry Lunny is going to be able to figure out a scheme, even if it does require keeping another man or two in to protect Luke. So it's one of those where I'm very hopeful, but it does feel like it's going to be the offense having to really kind of drive the bus on that one, because the defense is just not going to be. And maybe this is one of those classic, like you think that this is going to be an offensively driven game and the defense balls out and then they're creating some turnovers. Gabe starts playing like a first round pick. Matt Bailey comes back and looks awesome. And, they cover up for the cornerbacks who, I have faith that you can get some. If Juice Clark is back, that's very good, because I know that he might not be, CB1 potential yet, but that's a guy that you're then not having to rely on guys who are special teamers or maybe future pieces as much as they were last week. So I do think that you can get maybe some neutralization from the defense against USC's offense if, everything goes right, but I don't think we should plan on it. So then, to your point, then it turns into like, okay, we're just going to have the offense generate the winning formula here. And I think that they can. That's the thing, is, and if they do, great. We've seen a Brett Bielema team, make their corrections, and this is the hallmark of this program, and this is why we're in good hands going forward, and why you can't, freak out too much after a loss to IU. But it kind of depends on how the game looks too, because that is definitely going to be a telltale sign for not only the rest of the year, but then, how is this program looking in 2 to 3 years based off of the way that the offensive line has been curated. So just like, not to keep it like so forward facing, but just, yeah, it's pretty basic. Can you execute offensively? And if you do, then you're going to give yourself a good chance to still be in the game. And if not, then we're going to have another conversation like we just had this week.
All right, give me your player of the game.
All right, player of the game, I'm going to go with Cayden Fagan, just because I think a lot of that, what we just, building off what I just was talking about, I think he and pass protection is going to be something that is going to be overly scrutinized, but I think rightly so. I think that, you know, he's a guy too. Like, that's something where I hope that Brett's, you know, pulling him into his office and sitting him down, and they're talking about whatever schematic changes are going to happen, whatever protection that they need to be doing. Like, he's going through not just with the offensive line, but he's getting a guy like Cayden in there and saying, like, this is when Luke is calling, like, not that they haven't drilled that, but just like making sure that everyone is on their P's and Q's. So I think that's going to be like the big area of scrutiny for me, at least in terms of if he's doing that, he might not even put up some great stats, and I'm still going to be a huge fan of how his game looks. But I think against a USC defense that, once again, the trademark of them is not to necessarily be overly physical. If you can wear them down and get enough points on them, and then in the third and fourth quarter, you just lean on them, he's a great guy that, you know, can probably seal a game away. So he's going to be my pick of the week.
Yeah, USC's defensive front are, I think they lead the nation in sacks. And maybe it's one of those games where you try to pull the string, kind of what Indiana did to us. You get us caught trying to rush the passer pretty heavily, and you dump one down on a screen pass, and Cayden Fagan gets it. Yeah, when he gets up to speed, he's hard to stop. It's just he's not going to accelerate. I don't feel like he hits the holes with a ton of speed, but if he does and he's able to get some momentum behind him, he's so physical and so big and fast that he's almost impossible to take down. And I don't know, I like that pick just because, to your point, USC is not typically a super physical team. And if he can have some sort of edge going into this game, I mean, he's a force to be reckoned with when he is playing with that kind of violence. And we haven't seen a ton of it yet, but if he can get that going, I could see him having a big day. So I like that pick. I'm going to go with, on the defensive side of the ball, a guy who I think we need to set the tone. When you lose a guy like Xavier Scott, you don't have the edge that you typically have. Like, you don't have that Devin Witherspoon kind of attitude. And I think the one guy that has it, who seems like he'll be back from the concussion, is Matt Bailey. And I think we need him to have a big play early, because I'm guessing it's going to be a sleepy crowd after last week's game, an early game. I'm hopeful that the crowd has some life, but like, USC, I think, is going to look a little sleepy. I think we'll look a little sleepy, and you need to have a guy like that that just can single-handedly pull you out of that funk and say, like, we're a new team, this is a new week, we're not playing that football anymore. And if he could come in, make a big play early, whether it's a sack or just light a guy up on a crossing route over the middle, like, I think something like that could get the team energized and get things kind of swinging back the right way. So give me Matt Bailey this week, and I'll say an early first quarter momentum play, whether it's a big hit or a interception or a forced fumble, something along those lines, to try to get the guys going.
He might be the best since Jake at the peanut punch. Like, he is constantly looking, and he's so adept at it. Like, he is very good at getting his fist on the ball and knocking it out. Like, even if it's something where it's like dudes up on the sideline and like, yeah, it's not, it might be a forced fumble. I'm always looking for those kind of plays where like a guy is going out of bounds and he gets it punched out by like a guy like Matt Bailey, and then they throw the little blue bean bags, essentially noting that it's a forced fumble. Like, he's a guy who's just like always looking for that regardless of where he is on the field. And I think that, yeah, that's the kind of game changer that you need to have rise to the occasion for a game like this. And yeah, it's homecoming. It's going to be, you know, getting after it early. Hopefully, I saw that there was like a fun deal starting at 9:30 that, you know, you can get, you know, pretty cheap drinks and hot dogs and popcorn and whatnot. So if you're there, go have some fun in the stadium early and often, and maybe it won't be as sleepy. But yeah, I think it's going to be one of those where not only are the players licking their wounds, but people might be licking their wounds in the tailgate lots and maybe taking a little bit longer to get into the stadium. So if to all to the thousands and millions of Field Pass listeners who are listening to this right now, if you're going to the game, get in there early, you know, make a lot of noise, get the boys some juice, and you know, lead the team to victory.
All right, score prediction. How do you see this one going?
And on that note, I'm going to predict a loss, just because I just can't, like, it is year two of this offensive line. It's not only year two of the same offensive line, but they're full. It's not even like a Lovie Smith early in his tenure. I'm just going to play a bunch of freshmen. And yeah, it's year two, but they're still, you know, true sophomores or redshirt freshmen, or like, no, these are guys who should have this figured out pretty handily at this point. Like, this is just inexcusable. And so seeing that against IU and seeing it against Duke, like, once again, it was something that hopefully was going to be corrected. So you don't want to like bag on the bad. Like, you don't want to keep bringing that up just as like a, because that's not necessarily what, like, we can talk about it, and I'm more than happy to break that kind of stuff down, but like focusing on the negative like that is not necessarily what we need to be doing every single week. But it was definitely there, and then to see it, you know, not only just exposed to somewhat of a degree in the same way Duke was, but just abused in the way that it was, I'm very concerned. Especially to your point, USC, you know, leads the nation in sacks, or they're tied for the lead in the nation in sacks, and it's like, that's not necessarily a recipe that's going to, you know, instill confidence in me when making this pick. So I'm going to go USC 37, Illinois 28. So I guess it'll be kind of close, all things considered. Obviously not covering based on that score, but, you know, I think that that's a result I can sell myself on at least. But if it's like 37-10 or 37-13, I'm going to, you know, be pretty upset.
All right. I was going to go USC winning this game, but I feel like in order to counter you out, I had this weird, just weird switch in me where I think Illinois is going to somehow win this game now. I'm going to go 31-21 Illinois. And the one reason for this, it's Luke Altmyer. This guy is your leader. He's been your quarterback for three seasons now. You took a beat down last week. Brett Bielema, I think, is going to use that as a wake up call for this team. And it's all going to go through the leadership, the mentorship of a guy like Luke Altmyer. And for him to step up and have a big game in front of a big crowd when you had a bad game last week, I think it's going to be his response that carries us. And I'm going to actually surprisingly go 31-21 Illinois this week in an upset win on the national stage, bounce back game, and get the fan base back on board.
I mean, you picked correctly every single week, so I'm hard pressed to go against you. Well, I guess I am technically going against you, but I'm not upset with that at all. Even though you are going against me, that makes me not necessarily that I might be being a bit too reactionary. Like, I feel like I've laid out the case in terms of like, yeah, the sleepy spot for USC, the fact that Brett Bielema is great after a little bit of adversity, but you drew the great comparison to Oregon and Minnesota. And it's like, just because you're coming home after getting beat down doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be so locked in that you can just forget all the stuff that was exposed for last week's poor performance. So it's like, I don't necessarily want to get burned emotionally. Yeah, but I think there's also enough there that, like, I think that there's a counterbalance to the potential good. But I am more than happy to be surprised. And obviously, I'm not rooting to be correct in this sense. I just think that I can't will myself to pick an Illini dub this week, as much as I would love to.
Before we hit record, I very much came in here with the intention of choosing us to lose this game and not cover. And I've just flipped my script, talked myself into it. Last year, like we said, Oregon, you get beat down, then you lose to Minnesota. And I'm like, I think Bielema and Altmyer will draw on that experience from last year and know what buttons to push to get the guys ready for this one. And it's so tough. Like, we mentioned it, but like USC coming to the Midwest, playing a game that's 9 o'clock in the morning for their body clocks after playing a late game, you know, the week prior, it's going to be tough for them. I know Lincoln Riley's not been very happy with the scheduling and he's been vocal about it, but that's the price you pay to get California weather. And
or also just to join arguably the best conference in football. Like that, like, I don't want to hear it. Like, this is like the thing that, yes, of course the Big Ten benefits from it, but you are situated on almost the farthest portion of the west part of the United States intercontinental. Like, you're going to have that happen if you join the Big Ten, which is a Midwest / somewhat now East Coast based conference. Like, I don't understand how he's like, I can't believe that we're getting screwed like this. Like, you didn't think that, you thought they were just going to capitulate to every single thing and be like, oh yeah, every single game that they go east is going to be at 6:30 Eastern time, so that they, or 7:30 Eastern time, so that their bodies can figure it out. And it's like, no, like that's not the name of the game. Like you're good enough. You're USC. You think that you can compete in this conference, then go out there and prove it. I think that that's kind of weak sauce, if I'm being quite honest, because I think that if, you know, they lose to a team like Illinois, it's going to be because of the classic Lincoln Riley things and not because of this new excuse that he can, yes, he can technically use it because it is 9 o'clock local, but I think that that's just, you know, you being that guy, you always looking for that reason. That's the reason that, you know, you didn't win a national championship at Oklahoma. That's why you've sputtered at USC. So I think it's a symptom of the underlying problem of his teams having some softer tendencies. And, you know, maybe this year it's different and I'll eat these words, but I think that he's just kind of, you know, looking for something that he can show to boosters when, you know, they lose to Illinois and he's like, oh, well, this season could have been great. And it's so like, just get out of here.
Before we wrap up, allow me to get pre-mad about the fact that they're going to show the Rose Bowl game highlights like 1,000 times, because that's like the history they have between Illinois and USC. It's where it's going to go. It's going to be Juice Williams, Jay Layman, and it's going to be Ray Maliuga or whatever the dude's name was, Reggie Bush. And it's just going to be, I don't know. I don't want to deal with those highlights being shoved down our throat. So I'm already upset about it.
Hasn't you already know that. Yet. Yeah. You know that Leinart's going to be on the set of Big Noon Kickoff, needling those things and, you know, making sure that he's, you know, really putting some emphasis whenever they show them in the pregame and even, yeah, during the broadcast. That's going to be a tone setter for the faithful watching. So just don't get too triggered by it, because no, you know, the days are better, but yeah, I also, I can't control what you're feeling. If you know, if you're getting mad, then just go into the stadium at 9:30 and drink so many beers that are like $5 off or something like that, and have a million hot dogs. I think I saw Bob Zupke tweeting that destroying hot dogs at 9:30 in the morning is just ridiculous. And I want to meet the people who, like, I consider myself somewhat of a hot dog fan. And if you're in there at 9:30 just hammering glizzies, then please find a way to contact us, because maybe we'll bring you on for an interview, because that's just, we need more than three dogs consumed. If you do that before, let's say 10 o'clock, then you are potentially getting an open invite to the field pass. I'm making that executive decision right now.
Say, so anyone that's eaten three hot dogs before 9:30 a.m. has the resume to give the pregame speech to the Illini, because if you have that kind of energy, that's what we're going to need on Saturday.
Yeah, get that guy. Find someone who has eligibility and is eating three hot dogs at 9:30 a.m. I need that person on our squad in some capacity. Josh Whitman, make it happen.
All right. We'll leave it there. Illinois, USC, Fox Big Noon Kickoff, 11 a.m. Central Time. Bounce back opportunity. We'll see two ranked teams going at it again this week. So appreciate you guys for listening. As always, thanks and go Illini.